We're in Genesis chapter 18, talking about the visit of God and two of his angels to the encampment of Abraham about a year before the birth of Isaac. So this is all new information that God has been giving to Abraham in this year, that first of all, that he was going to have a son through Sarah. That son's name is going to be Laughter, because both he and she laughed whenever God told them about it. There is the need for this circumcision sign to help the descendants of Abraham to remember on a daily basis that they are committed to doing things his way. And then God dropped this bit of information that Sodom, Gomorrah, Adma, Zeboim, and Bela, the five cities of the Valley of Siddim, the place where probably the south bay of the Dead Sea is now located, that these cities had been so sinful that God could not allow them to go on existing. And Abraham walked with God toward the valley, probably got to a place only a couple of miles east of Hebron, where you can actually see down into the Dead Sea Valley. And he bargained with God. Why? We could say it's because he cared about the people of Sodom, which I think he did, because he had rescued quite a few of them only a few years earlier from being carried away into Mesopotamian exile. But most certainly his biggest concern is that his nephew, his nephew's wife, their two daughters, probably teenagers, are down there in Sodom. And so Genesis 18:22, let's kind of real quickly review the wording here before we move on. So the men turned from there and they went towards Sodom, but Abraham still stood before he who is. Then Abraham drew near and said, "Will you indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked?" And he's thinking more than likely about his nephew Lot, whom the New Testament refers to as a righteous man. Now, why was he living in Sodom? I don't think we can clearly answer that. I think it's possible that's where his wife is from. Possible. And so that would tie him in there. He certainly has business arrangements with that region. That's the region he picked when he and his uncle separated their growing companies several years earlier. But Abraham doesn't want his nephew and family to be swept away with the wicked ones there. Verse 24, suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. Will you then sweep away the place and not spare it for the 50 righteous who are in it? And I suggested to you that it's possible at this time, given the small world population, that there may have only been 50,000 or so inhabitants in the promised land, and therefore many of these cities that we keep reading about would have only been made up of a few hundred people. And so 50 is like 10% or more of such a population. And so Abraham starts with the reasonableness of, if there's a big minority that is righteous, wouldn't you spare it? Verse 25, far be it from you to do such a thing, to put the righteous to death with the wicked, so that the righteous fare as the wicked. Far be that from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do what is just? A great question. It is rhetorical. It is intended to move God to compassion. God's response, verse 26, the Lord said, if I find at Sodom 50 righteous in the city, I will spare the whole place for their sake. Now, he already knows how many righteous there are down there. And it's not going to be the number that Abraham settles on. But he goes through the exercise nonetheless because Abraham needs this. Abraham needs to understand that there is no hope at this point. Verse 27, Abraham answered and said, behold, I've undertaken to speak to the Lord, I who am but dust and ashes. Suppose 50 or 5 of the 50 righteous are lacking. Will you destroy the whole city for lack of 5? And God said, I won't destroy it if I find 45 there. Again, he spoke to him and said, suppose 40 are found there. He answered, for the sake of 40, I will not do it. And then he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. Suppose 30 are found there. And he answered, I will not do it if I find 30 there. He said, behold, I've undertaken to speak to the Lord. Suppose 20 are found there. And he said, for the sake of 20, I will not destroy it. And then he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry, but I will speak again, but this once. Suppose 10 are found there. And he answered, for the sake of 10, I will not destroy it. And it seems as if Abraham believes that he's reached a number that might spare the place. Only 10 righteous people. And he's starting with a base group of his nephew and his two unmarried daughters and maybe not his wife, but perhaps his wife, and maybe a few others. Certainly there must be at least 10 in the several hundreds of this city that are not totally gone into the throes of sin. And so he stops. Verse 33, and then he who is went his way, and when he'd finished speaking to Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. So Abraham goes back to Hebron, probably just a few miles is all he traveled with him. And then the story shifts to the two angels. And it specifically says in chapter 19 that these other two individuals of the three are angels. Now, angel, we'll explain this now, and maybe we'll mention it from time to time in our studies. Angel is an English word that's taken from a Greek word, angelos. Angelos means messenger. And these are divine messengers. And so it is probably appropriate that we've adopted a certain type of word to distinguish supernatural messengers of God from human messengers. So the two angels came to Sodom in the evening. So they're arriving as the sun is going down. It's the end of the day. People have come in from the fields. They're all going to their different houses for the night. And Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. Now, the gate is the place where business transactions happen. It's also the place where legal transactions happen. And that is why some of those with influence tend to hang out at the gate to help in these transactions, to add legitimacy to them. Lot has been living in Sodom for a little while now, and he is a very wealthy individual. And from that, he has gained influence. And so he is sitting in the gate, and when Lot saw these two strangers, he doesn't realize they're angels yet, he rose to meet them and bowed himself with his face to the earth. And he said, my lords, please turn aside to your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may rise up early and go on your way. Now that sounds very similar to what Abraham had said to the three strangers that had come past his encampment back in chapter number 18. So this is the practice of hospitality, the love of strangers, the caring about others that you may not know who come into your sphere of influence. Now, Lot has a bigger reason for offering hospitality. He is well aware that Sodom, like the other four cities, are not good places to be for strangers, because the Sodomites, the people from the cities of this plain, don't care about anyone but themselves. That comes from the Ezekiel story that we've read, that they are fat and happy from their merchandising, and they don't care about the poor, they don't care about the weak, they only care about themselves. They have become so self-centered that they're even doing that thing that happens in self-absorbed societies. They're becoming bored, and they are experimenting with boundaries of propriety, and they're engaging, because of that, into all sorts of deviant sexual behavior. And I use deviant in an instructed way from Scripture, because sexuality was part of the original design of God. It's there in Genesis chapters 1 and 2. And God's original design, not just simply for humanity, you can see it in other created beings of that period, he made them male and female. And his intention was that one male, one female would be joined together for a lifetime. And so that is boring for people that are self-centered and have much more than what they need to exist on. And so these guys have deviated into all sorts of strange practices that it's not limited simply to homosexuality, which is highlighted in this story. I am sure that it goes into bestiality and all sorts of other inappropriate things that will be part of the Mosaic Code that the Israeli people are going to be reading not too long after they've finished reading the book of Genesis. All right, so the two angels said back to Lot, no, we'll spend the night in the town square. So the town square here is not like the town square that we think of here in the United States with a courthouse and or maybe a little gazebo and four streets around it with parking places and things like that. It is an open area between the gate to the outside world and the gate that goes into the city proper. This is in a double-gated city. And so it was the place where people would set up stands to sell things during the day. And at night, everybody cleared out. And it was just like an open park area, if you will. So they're basically saying, no, we'll just hang out here between the two gates. But he pressed them strongly. Why? Because he knows that once the sun goes down, there's going to be a whole bunch of these bored, deviant-minded people looking for something different to do. Verse number 3 continues. So they turned aside to him, and they entered his house. He made them a feast, dinner, and he baked unleavened bread, and they ate. But before they lay down, you know, to go to sleep for the night, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both young and old, all these people, to the last man, surrounded the house. And they called to Lot, "Where are those men who came to you tonight? Bring them out that we may know them." And the word "know" here is not as, "Hey, we heard you had some people come to town. We'd like to have a chat with them and see if they've got any new news, or maybe they've got some interesting stories to tell. We just like to sit down and get to know them." No, that is not what we're talking about here. This is a euphemism for sexual activity. And since these two angels are being presented in masculine form, and this mob is made up of men, it is clear that we're talking about homosexuality. All right. So Lot went out to the men at the entrance, and he shut the door after him. So he goes out to talk with his neighbors, thinking he's safe. It was a bad assumption. But he goes outside and shuts the door behind him so that he's standing between them and the entrance to his house, because he is trying to protect these strangers from his neighbors that he knows have odd proclivities. And he says, "I beg you, my brothers, do not act so wickedly." And then Lot does something that should disturb us, and it does. And we cannot pull any punches about it. We need to call balls and strikes. We need to express exactly what this is. This is him engaging in sinful suggestions, sinful thinking. And the best that we can do is try to understand why. And I think the answer is pretty simple. It's panic. He is driven by this conviction, "I must protect these strangers at all costs." And somehow it causes him to make bad thinking about his own children. He says in verse 8, "Behold, I have two daughters who have not known any men." So they are both virgins. Now that is an amazing thing in this highly sexualized city. And we know it was. But he basically says, look, instead of violating these visitors, would you consider instead taking my daughters early to yourselves as wives? You can have sex with him if that's what's being driven right this moment. Bad offer. Bad thinking. Bad parenting. Again, when we read the Bible, we are reading authentic, genuine history. And even some of the best heroes don't always make the best choices and present themselves well. And so Lot, although he is said to be a righteous man in the New Testament, it also says there that his soul was vexed. That's the old King James, I think. But he was bothered constantly the whole time he was living there with the sinfulness of the people around him. And under pressure here, he cracks and makes this bad suggestion. Continues, "Let me bring them out to you and do them as you please. Only do nothing to these men, for they have come under the shelter of my roof." Lot has come out of a Bedouin sort of environment, and it has been understood throughout history that Bedouin hospitality is very rigid. That once you come under the tent, or in this case, the house of a Bedouin leader, they are solely responsible for your safety and security. And so he is trying to act as the protector of these two men. But the neighbors are not having that. They said, "You stand back." And then they said to each other, "This fellow came here to sojourn, and he's become a judge." So basically, now they're pointing out, "You're not even a local. You just moved in here with all your wealth and possessions and bought a house here. You're an outsider. And now you're daring to suggest that you get to call the shots, that you get to decide what's good and bad for us." And then they threaten him. "Now we'll deal worse with you than with them." And so now they turn their anger and threats upon a very powerful individual in their midst, but a man who is sorely outnumbered by this mob. And so they pressed hard against the man Lot, and they drew near to break the door down. So they want to get into the house, and Lot is in their way, and they're shoving him up against the door and trying to figure out a way to get the door open. And that's when verse 10 says, "The men," these two angels, "reached out their hands, and they brought Lot into the house with them, and they shut the door. And then they struck with blindness the men who were at the entrance of the house, both small and great." So these angelic beings have the power to do whatever it is that God has authorized them to do. And in this case, the whole bunch lost their ability to see. Now, the next phrase I held on to because it helps us understand just how crazy out of control the people of Sodom are, how so very sinful they have become. So they have been struck blind suddenly as a group, and yet they wore themselves out groping for the door. So even though they, as individuals in this corporate group, can't see, and it's clear that it's a supernatural event, they still try to follow through with their sin program. And so that should help us understand that there is no hope for this place. So the men said to Lot, "Have you anyone else here? Sons-in-law, sons, daughters, anyone you have in the city? Bring them out of the place." So they start throwing out possible connections. It's interesting, he said sons here. It's possible that Lot and his wife did have a couple of adult sons that have already moved out of the house. He definitely has two unmarried daughters, and he has two betrothed sons-in-law. And they're referred to as sons-in-law because once you give a dowry, then you are legally bound to that person. Almost as effectively as a marriage. You have to go through a divorce ceremony in order to get out of it. So Lot is basically being told, if there is anyone besides the people in this house, you need to get them here. Why? Verse 13, "For we are about to destroy this place because the outcry against its people has become great before he who is, and he who is has sent us to destroy it." So now they reveal that they are supernatural agents. And Lot, who believes in God, the one true God, he accepts their description of their job, what they're about to do, and he acts as they suggested. So Lot went out and he said to his sons-in-law, who were to marry his daughters, "Up, get out of this place, for he who is about to destroy the city." But he seemed to his sons-in-law to be jesting. So his sons-in-law thought he was trying to prank them, trying to make fun of them. And so they didn't come, even though they're engaged to his two daughters. And so they will die in the city. Verse 15, as morning dawned, so the sun is now starting to lighten up the horizon, the angels urge Lot, saying, up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be swept away in the punishment of the city. But he lingered. So the men seized him and his wife and his two daughters by the hand, he who is being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside the city. So God's instructions to these angels are basically, you will take Lot out of the city and his immediate household. You will take them outside the city for the sake, for their sake, and also for the sake of Abraham. And as they brought them out, one said, escape for your life. Do not look back or stop anywhere in the valley. So nowhere in the flatland. Escape to the hills, lest you be swept away. Now the hills that are being described here are the hills to the east, what will eventually become Moab. It's on the east side of the south bay of the Dead Sea. And so Lot said to them, oh no, my lords, behold, your servant has found favor in your sight. You've shown me great kindness in saving my life, but I can't escape to the hills, lest the disaster overtake me and I die. Behold, this city is near enough to flee to. It's only a little one. Let me escape to it. Isn't it not a little one? And my life will be saved. And so he said to him, behold, I grant you this favor also, that I will not overthrow the city of which you have spoken. Escape there quickly, for I can do nothing till you arrive there. Therefore, the name of that city was called Zoar. It used to be Bela, and it was on the southeast corner of the south bay of what's now the Dead Sea.